Good morning. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Annika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us. Welcome to this dance space. Well, folks, as you enter into the space, as always, we invite you to come in as we explore the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. And today, our conversation will take you on a pathway which explores liberation, emancipation, resistance, and much, much more. Coming up on today's show, multi-award-winning artist, scholar, dance educator, and cultural arts programmer Colette Coco Murray is in the house and will be opening up about dancing in a procession experience rooted in oppression. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with Colette Coco Murray right after this. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. I'm Nicole Annika Hamilton. My guest today, Colette Coco Murray, is a multi-award-winning artist, scholar, dance educator, and cultural arts programmer. Coco received the 2023 National Award for Outstanding Leadership in Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion from the National Dance Education Organization. She is pursuing a PhD in dance studies focusing on dance education in the Canadian African diasporic dance sector and anti-racist dance pedagogies. She is published in dance media and academic journals and as an emerging dance scholar. Coco presents research on various panels and international conferences. She is the artistic director of Coco Collective, which offers culturally responsive projects connecting participants, organizations, and schools to African and Caribbean arts. Miss Coco Murray is her mobile dance education business, and Coco performs Caribbean folklore and West African dance styles such as stilt walking, which we'll also be exploring on today's conversation. Please join me in welcoming back to Turnout Radio, Colette Coco Murray. Coco, welcome back to Turnout Radio. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm very good. Look at my face. I'm very good. Look at me smiling away, because it truly is always such a joy to be in conversation with you, Coco. I find that every time we are in the midst of each other's company. There is very often deep discussion, laughter, and discovery in our chats. And so I'm looking forward to today's conversation.
Well, thank you for having me back. Welcome to the Turnout Radio audience. It's another year evolving in the dance world, and just happy to be here and to discuss very important dance topics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how have you been since the last time we sat down?
I have been well. You know, I had to rest. I had to recuperate. I had to rejuvenate, and which leads me into this week. There's even more rejuvenating that's happening this week in multiple ways and in an artistic way as well. So I'll be speaking about those things a bit later.
I know that you've often referred, when we've had conversations of this nature, about the emancipation of the waistline.
Yes, yes. This particular week, for the listeners, as you know, it's Toronto Caribbean Carnival, but I always call it Carabana because that is the root name of the whole festival. So this whole week, we are emancipating the mind and the waistline.
Well, as we get into the discussion, I'd love to start there. Our previous discussion on the show, we had spoken about the integration of anti-racist collaboration with African diasporic teaching dance artists.
Yes.
And today, we gather to further our discussion on the liberation that you and I speak of and the dancing body. Now, as a dance practitioner and educator, your work is centered on African diasporic dance and cultural dance education. This is work which has explored a vast range of research, writings, movement, creation, and so much more. And so talk to us about the epicenter of your work.
I've been very passionate about identity. I've been passionate about understanding many cultures across the African diaspora, beyond my own nationality and heritage, because a number of the community, we have multiple ethnic groups that make up our lineage and our history and our ancestry. So just breaking that divide and making like transnational connections between, you know, me living here in North America on Turtle Island, but then having a relationship with South America, where my family's from Guyana, but then tracing it back to the African continent, where there is also multiple ethnic groups that are part of my lineage. So you can't erase all of those things just to say I am Canadian, right? So my work is really making connections and really looking at the educational experience. How can the arts and the education be fused together? And for the dance sector, even dance education, to acknowledge all of the dance practices and the knowledge systems that they come from, especially from the African and Caribbean diaspora.
Now, as we're looking at dance education, something comes to mind here, Coco. You and I have been educators for many years, and I know that we have spoken in previous conversation about what it looks like to disseminate information to those we are teaching. When you reflect upon working as a dance educator, what are some of the discoveries that you've had about the process of disseminating information to groups of different ages, for example?
I look at the organization, I look at the population that I'm going to conduct or facilitate a workshop with. That plays a role because it depends on, of course, dance level expertise. If it's a beginner group, if it's a community group that hasn't engaged in the practice before, then I have to customize it a particular way. If it is like a National Ballet School, for example, where I have taught, I facilitated some workshops, I know I'm coming into a dance-focused environment with dance students, but I'm introducing different vernacular culture and information. And then if I'm going to, for example, create an, a research creation project and I'm in a museum, for example, I have to think about what would that diverse audience look like and what components am I going to build into the project. So everything that I'm doing has to have an educational focus, even though it could, they may think it's just a dance workshop. No, they're going to get context. They're going to get information. They're going to get, they're coming away with learning something more beyond just the vernacular and the style and hearing the musicality and the different musical language. So they're getting, I guess I would say, an intersection of many things that will position them to understand the African diasporic sector and a bit better. So there will be the intent of the workshop itself or the facilitate what I'm facilitating, but I'm also considering the audience as well. I'm considering the organization, their network, because I'm preparing to share knowledge and exchange in that moment. So I want to make sure that the premise of what I'm trying to get across can be transmitted, but I also can educate people on the culture that I'm representing or sharing at that moment. So whether I am on my stilts dancing, whether I am teaching virtually online, whether it is a, I'm part of a keynote presentation for the book chapter that happened, all of these elements, I'm going to have an educational focus.
For those who didn't have an opportunity to catch your previous interview with us, where you did speak about the publication Arts-Based Pedagogies, we invite you to head on over to turnoutradio.com so that folks can learn a bit more, Coco, about the conversation that we had about the chapter that you contributed to that publication. So, Coco, as we're talking about education, I mentioned earlier that you perform Caribbean folklore and West African dance styles that explore many of these navigations. And so let's talk about the sharing through performance aspect now and what the ethos of that work looks like for you.
Yes. Yeah, so what tends to happen is I can use my performance as another medium to educate. So if I'm going to a fete, if I'm going into a production, theater, or any space, the street, it's an opportunity for me to use the performance to unfold a story, to evoke the an inquiry. Why is that happening? What does the character represent? Why is the dress look like this? Why is this still dancer dancing like this? So it evokes a lot of questions because it's informed by culture. The performance is informed by context. It's informed by history. It's informed by community. It's informed by rebellion and advocacy. Like, so there's a reason why my character is going to dress the way it dresses. There is going to be a reason why I dance the way I do, because my embodiment has all of these intersections, and then I'm bringing it out through the performance wherever I am.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about the invoking of the inquiry. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that so much because I think that it begs for us to embrace the understanding that this is about more than a performance.
Yes, it is. I'll give you an example. So currently I'm involved in a project called Tech a Jump. So TECH, which is an intersection with immersive technology. And so I have collaborated with immersive technology production with the Black Digital Arts and Technology Association. So they created an immersive carnival experience at the Toronto Illuminarium. That was held at the Distillery District. This has been a groundbreaking project. Never before has this happened, where they have told the carnival origin story and its connections to influencing the creation of Carabana, by the migrant community of Caribbean communities, and then also extending into how Caribbean Carnival has really impacted in a global context. And so my role was to bring in the live performance element, where I curated a group of artists. So there was live steel pan artists, there was a group of dance artists of different generations, as well as myself and another colleague as Moko Jumbi characters. So the story is really to unfold the roots, the resistance, the true essence of the early carnival origins, and what that processional experience looked like, the folklore into the early carnival processions, and the meaning around the carnival, so that it educated the audience, but they were able to have this immersive opportunity because, you know, Black joy is immersive. It's within our bodies, right? And we express it through in a nonverbal way. That's part of the emancipation and that liberation experience. Not only are we honoring our ancestors who went through very, you know, challenging moments, but it was also a strategic opportunity to express, you know, political and social commentary through our performance, our theater in the street, etc. So that is one way that I use the stilt dancing element of the Moko Jumbi character to help educate audiences. So as a practitioner, it's an extension of, I guess, the repertoire that I'm building and evolving in. So as someone who has West African dance, you know, vocabulary within my body, and then I also have Caribbean folklore in my body, and then I'm extending it, I'm just on stilts. It's an extension. But there has been, of course, historically secret societies within West African and Central African traditions that have stilt dance traditions. And this is sort of what I'm trying to connect back to the Caribbean character, that there is a reference to the West African cosmology.
Stay with us. More of Colette Coco Murray coming up after this.
Thank you.
the historical context around what really was rooted in why the carnival even began, which was the, you know, the British slave trade and the transatlantic slave trade, and how multiple ethnic groups were brought as labor into in indigenous regions in the Caribbean and also in South America. And every time I'm on the road, I'm thinking about the plantation, I'm thinking about the way the bodies were treated. They were not seen as human. And through their expressions of protest and their experience on the plantation and seeing how the elitist masters were celebrating their carnival balls and how they were unable to engage in their own practices, even if it was secretly. The moment that they had some moment of liberation, they tried to capture that. And the start of the Trinidad origin story, even though there's plantation stories across the whole Caribbean and in South America, different riots, different experiences, that Trinidad origin story of the Cane Brûlée started as a night procession. So whatever, like the whole experience about, you know, the molasses and using that to conceal the body, but even the cruelty around, if you did not do what they wanted you to do, you could be thrown into the molasses yourself, right? So there's deep histories around that and how the community turned around and strategically used that as, we are going to claim that terrible experience and make a new experience, but a creative experience, because we're coming from masquerade traditions stemming from our African knowledge systems. There's masquerade traditions that we also had, right? So it's finding ways with the environment and the resources that you have to create an opportunity to use your body to respond to the oppression that you're facing. And we use our art to do that. So when I'm on that parade route, I'm thinking about all of those things, and whatever I have adorned or whatever costume that I have thought through to create or to work with someone to help me prepare, I'm on that lakeshore, that street, and I am thinking about all of that historical context. I'm thinking about the carnival is a site for me to also be part of the social commentary through my dancing, through the costume. And I'm going to spark questions. Why is this happening? Why are we doing it? And I'm thinking about my lineage, and I'm thinking about, I am doing this for my ancestors. I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my community. I'm doing this for my people, because we've endured a lot. So I take it a little bit more seriously than, as I'm smiling and I'm enjoying myself and I'm releasing my own oppressions and tensions that I'm also dealing with on a day-to-day basis. I'm thinking about that lineage and that ancestry. So that's why the processional experience would mean something to me and my artistic colleagues who also fostered this understanding. Then I'm simply here wearing a costume with some music to have a party. I'm taking it a little bit more deeper because I'm always surrounded by context and what does it mean? And I have to have a responsibility in my processional experience. That's what I'm always thinking through.
There's an intentionality in the adornment. Mm-hmm. And an intentionality in all of the decisions that are being made.
That's because that's what our ancestors had to deal with. They had to be intentional too. They had to be intentional in how they were going to survive, but they also intentional how they were going to tell the story and how they were going to protest and resist. And they used the art form and their folklore, their creative minds to do that. So I'm another generation that understands this, and so I'm trying to make sure that my processional experience is not only responsible, but it's educational to the spectator on the parade route, But also to anyone that sees me, because I've been involved in education and dance and now research. That is who I am. So I am embodying and I'm unfolding that identity wherever I go.
The processional experience in relationship to the history that you have shared. Have there been any discoveries that you could share with us?
In research and, of course, in conversations, there is always the understanding amongst practitioners around it wasn't unless there was permission. You already are dealing with colonial control. There wasn't always permission. You have to take and occupy space to, in order to actualize who you are. So you have to self-determine, right? So the discoveries that I've had is instead of being a follower with whatever's happening, I need to be self-determined. So when I am in that processional space, I am an acting with the intention, the protests, the resistance, because I'm not going to just follow everyone, right? So that's one of the discoveries. Before, when I used to play masquerade, it was, oh, I'm just enjoying with what along with everyone else and following. Now I've completely shifted. I am intentionally making strategic decisions and how I present myself, but also occupying the space so that I can fully release myself in honor of my ancestors in this experience.
You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Coco, your research continues and the work continues with quite a few different events and sharings that you are partaking in. Let us know, please. Talk to us about what you have coming up.
On the road today, I will be part of the Blue Devil and Mokojumbi Mass Camp. Our activation is with Carnival Nations, which is one of the larger masquerade groups. So the theme that we are presenting will be Jungle Creatures of the Night, Bunning Faya. So just look out for that and see how the audience responds to our activation. So that's one. Second, on August the 8th, I will be part of the Street Art Toronto Emancipation Exhibition, which will be at the Worth Gallery at 830 Dundas Street West in Toronto. So I will be there giving an artist talk and doing a dance performance from 6 to 8 p.m. Then I head over to Oshawa to the Robert McLaughlin Gallery, and I'll be part of their, I guess, their Friday night engagement. So I also, we will be joined by members of Coco Collective. So you'll see an activation of Coco Mokojumbi as well to live West African percussion, and might see a little bit more dance, probably me on the stilts, yes, but also on the ground. So you'll see a different opportunity of how I activate in that space as well. So again, We have a lot of activity, but it's also part of my intentional education of the Kokomoko Jumbie character, as you can see the logo on my t-shirt. Engaging in these spaces and educating audiences on our diverse dance practices and stilt dance traditions is part of the cosmology.
I recognize that you will be entering into the intentionality of what we spoke about on today's episode. What's resting on your heart as you enter into today?
My hope is for multiple generations and even the younger generations to really understand what carnival means a bit more. So they will witness some things, they will see some things, and I hope it really sparks questions and they will come up and ask us questions, even though we're on the road in our own liberation moment, but coming up to us to ask questions about what are we doing, because that's also an opportunity to educate another person as well. So I'm just hoping to just educate all generations, spectators, visitors, anyone that's there at the event and the subsequent events that are coming up as well.
As we begin to dance our way to the close of today's interview, wow, do I wish that I could keep you longer, Coco. Where can individuals find out more about you, the work that you are doing? Where can they find out more?
This year is my 25th year in dance, so I have rebranded my website. So you can find out more on www.misscocomurray.com, and it really unfolds a full story around my start in the industry, the projects that I'm involved in, and also learn more about the publications and the different opportunities that I am currently able to offer.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, call it Coco Murray, Miss Coco, Coco. It has been such a wonderful pleasure, and I must say an honor to call you a friend, a colleague. I want to thank you so much for joining me on Turnout Radio. It's been so special to have you here today, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, so do I, and hopefully my colleague Ronald Taylor, because we've been doing our yearly Turnout Radio interviews around the Caribbean Carnival and really dissecting some of these intersections and unfolding conversations that people may not normally think about.
Absolutely. Yes. A shout out to Ronald Taylor. What a wonderful human. Big shout out to Ronald, and looking forward to having you both come together again for our future conversation on the show. Thank you to Ronald. And thank you, of course, Coco, for sitting down in conversation with me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was the delightful Colette Coco Murray sitting in behind the mic with me today. Now, if you missed the top of the episode, as always, we invite you to visit turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and some of your favorite podcast platforms where this episode will soon be streaming. The Toronto Caribbean Carnival is on now, and we welcome you to take in the conversations that we've been having on the show, which speak to emancipation, resistance, liberation, and the dancing body. In addition to today's discussion, archives of our coverage can all be found at turnoutradio.com. And folks, we'd love to hear from you. To connect with our production team, emails can be sent to turnoutradio@ciut.fm. Well, this brings us to a close of this portion of our program. Up next and following this segment, stay tuned for some musical hits coming your way. Thank you for tuning in to share time and rhythm with us today. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you.
song again. Jump and shake the ground again. Wave with all my friends and them. No place like home.
Magica.